Okay, so in this talk I would like to give a brief review of this rather intimidating number of papers, so it will be about 3 minutes per paper. Some of these papers are somewhat old, and in preparing this talk I realized that actually I talked about some of this at Strings 97 and even Strings 96. So if I'm not invited to Strings 99, you'll know why. But some of it is a little bit more recent. So I will give some introduction about the basic philosophy on the relation between black brains and deep brains, and therefore gauge theories. And then in the second part, I will focus on one specific issue, which has to do with the thermodynamics of N equal force supersymmetric and Mill theory, I will basically discuss something which has some bearing on the famous three-quarters mismatch between the weakly coupled and strongly coupled entropy. So this is the new part of the... Okay. So some of this was, of course, implicit in a number of talks yesterday, but I cannot resist discussing a little bit of the basic philosophy of this relation. And one question that's stuck in my mind is, if this is not conformal invariance, then what is it? So I'd like to give a sort of a clear discussion of why we believe there is actually a relation between supergravity and strongly coupled gauge theory. So this will involve going back in time a little bit. So I warn you that my time machine is about an order of magnitude worse than Mike Duff's time machine, because he went about a couple decades back and I will only go back a couple of years. And the essential message here is the microscopic description of black brains. So in one of the exciting developments 2 years ago was a microscopic description of five-dimensional black holes, which became possible because of the introduction of the deep brains into string theory. So some of the works that followed had to do with the microscopic description of a simpler system, which instead of intersecting brains just involves parallel or in fact coincident brains, and this system has twice as much supersymmetry as five-dimensional black holes. So basically we have the well-known solutions of type 2 supergravity, which are charged under Ramon-Ramon fields, and this class of solution was first discussed by Horowitz and Strominger, and for the case of interest, which is a three-brain, was discussed by Duff and Liu, also in the extremal case. These solutions, although very interesting, I think they found their true application after the discovery of deep brains, because it became clear that deep brains are essentially a more elemental manifestation of these supergravity solutions. So basically, we have two dual descriptions of the same physical reality, or unphysical reality, because this is flat 10 dimensions. one of them is this supergravity solution. The other one is a collection of a large number n of parallel deep brains. Now, heuristically, you need a large number to obtain a macroscopic object, and we'll be more precise about this in a moment, because a single deep brain is like a single electron. It just carries one quantum of charge, and when we put a large number of them, then we will find something macroscopic which carries a large quantity of charge. And in fact, we will want this charge to become very large so that we're capable of applying this duality. So now, what was emphasized by Witten was that when you put n parallel d brains, you find UN gauge theory with 16 supercharges on the world volume of the system. And you have a very nice geometric picture with the gauge bosons being just strings stretched between the brains. There are n squared of them. So on the world volume of this combined system, you have the supersymmetric gauge theory. Now the 9 minus p transverse positions, which are scalars, just denote the masses of these gauge bosons. And what you immediately realize in building a dictionary between this and this is that if we want to describe a single center solution, we want to basically go to the origin of the moduli space. Namely, we consider the theory where all the scalar expectation values are set to zero. And this is, of course, a particularly difficult point from the field theoretic point of view. But now supergravity actually gives us, as I'll discuss, a bunch of predictions about what this theory is actually doing. And as far as we can tell, all these predictions are consistent with symmetries and incorporative and more, namely the dynamics of the theory. So the idea is that for an appropriate choice of parameters, which is n, g string, and alpha prime, the n coincident d-brains will carry exactly the same Ramon-Ramon charge and the same amount of supersymmetry as these black p-brain solutions, the extremal black p-brain solutions. So basically, they can be regarded as two different dual descriptions of the same object. And this is really, then with some more scaling limits, this amounts to the duality between certain supergravity backgrounds and large n-gauge theories. Now, once you look a little bit more at these solutions, you realize that all of them are singular at the horizon, except for the three-brain, because the dilaton blows up either one way or another way for p less than 3 or p greater than 3. But for the three-brain, the dilaton is actually exactly constant. Now the dilaton just measures the string coupling, and then we realize that basically the string coupling is position independent for the three-brain. Later on, we'll see that this is just a manifestation of the fact that the n equal 4 super Young Mills theory has a vanishing beta function. Therefore, the coupling is completely scale independent. So the simplest, while you can apparently get some mileage even out of p different than three solutions, I will not discuss them here, and I will discuss sort of the perfect brain, which is the three brain. There are very similar stories that go along with brains in 11-dimensional M theory, which are M5 brains and M2 brains, but because of the lack of time, I'll just focus on the three-brain for concreteness. And the three-brain is really the key to understanding the gauge theory. So basically, some of the thermodynamics issues were studied in a paper by these authors. And if you want to equate the charge of n coincident d3-brains and this extremal black three-brain solution, you see that basically ADM tension of 1 is given by the scale parameter r to the 4 divided by kappa squared. And Joe Palczynski was able to normalize the tension of a single D3 brain. So this is the tension of a single D3 brain, and we have to multiply it by n to equate the two. And this gives us the following relation between the geometrical quantity and string coupling and n. So you see that this GN combination appears here. Then when we interpret this as a world volume gauge theory, we will see that G string is actually G Young Mills squared. So the natural quantity that appears is actually the 12th coupling, G squared N. And this is one of the reasons why this supergravity description actually incorporates a 12th coupling for free. It just comes along with the story. So now this is, of course, not the end, because this solution, the supergravity solution, is just obtained in the leading low-energy approximation, but we're trying to do string theory. So in string theory, there are, of course, string-scale corrections. And if you want this description, the supergravity description, to be precise, you want to eliminate all sources of alpha-prime corrections. Now, you immediately see two sources of corrections. One is just due to the fact that the throat of the three-brain has a finite size. So if the throat of the three-brain has a size of order string scale, there are large corrections. So in other words, you want to make the throat very large. So there are corrections measured by this dimensionless quantity alpha prime over r squared. And as we saw in the last transparencies, this is just 1 over square root of g string n. So if you want to suppress this sort of corrections, you want to send Gn to infinity. Then there is another source. If you study, for example, some processes on this background which have characteristic energy omega, then there will, of course, be corrections measured by omega squared times alpha prime. So what occurred to me over a year ago is that basically because the metric is so smooth and there are no singularities, you really do have a completely reliable description in this sort of double scaling limit when Ng string goes to infinity and omega squared alpha prime is sent to zero. And this is really the limit where you expect supergravity to give some exact information about the D equal 4 Suprian Mills theory. And the concrete sense of this I'll discuss in a second. And then the story will be continued by Steve Dobser in the next talk. So another observation is that if you want to suppress string loop corrections, you also want to send G string to zero. And since this quantity goes to infinity, you of course have to take n to be very large and take the large end limit. So therefore, the black three brain gives us predictions concerning the strong Toft coupling behavior of the large M gauge theory. So you took n to infinity, and you also took g squared n to infinity. Now, you can also imagine, as was emphasized by Juan Maldacena, keeping g squared n large but fixed, okay? And then the stringy alpha prime corrections become not exactly zero but small, and using these alpha prime corrections, you can actually build up a strong coupling expansion in inverse powers of g squared n. Okay, and so I will try to end the talk with a concrete application of this. So now there are also the string loop corrections, which you can easily see are measured by powers of the, this is Planck, basically gravitational constant over r to the 8, which is 1 over n squared. So if we take the large n limit first and keep g squared n fixed but large, we basically map the whole calculation to just classical string physics with small alpha prime corrections. In other words, the supergravity limit becomes arbitrarily good as g squared n increases in this limit. And this is really an amazing prediction because it precisely tells us something about the regime of the gauge theory, which a priori we know very little about, except for the fact that we believe it should have superconformal invariance and it should obey Toft scaling. And these two features are immediately incorporated automatically into the supergravity description. So there are some immediate checks, and then there are some much more non-trivial checks, which I would say at the moment are few, but nevertheless, as you already heard yesterday, the story has had a number of successes. So one of the applications which I'll briefly address is the relation between two-point functions of certain vertex operators and absorption coefficients. So one can imagine probing this collection of coincident D3 brains by some waves coming in from the extra dimensions. This is a standard calculation in black hole physics and was done earlier by a number of people for the five-dimensional black hole. Now, the new feature for the three brain is that because the three brain at extremality has a vanishing horizon area, at low energies, this absorption cross-section actually vanishes as a power of omega. And the amazing thing is that this power of omega tells you something about the exact operator dimensions in the strong coupling limit. So the goal is to solve this box phi equals zero equation. And you see that the equation naturally simplifies in two regions. One is the throat region, which is the region of small rho. And the other one is the asymptotic region, which is the region of large rho. And indeed, schematically, the geometry of the three brain has this semi-infinite throat, which has the geometry of ADS 5 crosses 5. And then the throat basically opens up into asymptotically flat space. So what we're doing is we're trying to probe the throat by sending in some waves from the asymptotically flat region, basically from here, and then they go in here. So this is, of course, a calculation any undergraduate can do. You find that after recasting the equation, you just obtain an ordinary Schrodinger equation and a potential which has a barrier. So effectively, you see that it's actually not so easy to penetrate from here to here. You have to tunnel through a barrier. And a very simple estimate or calculation in the low energy limit is based on a matching method, whose details, of course, I will not describe, but it's just matching the throat solutions with the outside solutions, and you find that the absorption probability goes as omega to the 8th power. And what, so this in itself does not seem like a terribly interesting thing to do for a living, but it turns out that this actually tells you that the operator to which dilaton couples has exact dimension, which is 4, because this absorption probability goes as omega to the twice the dimension of the operator. And so let me explain why that is. I mean, so basically the probability has this limit, and it helps to be careful about the coefficients, which I'll explain in a second. Now, a more complete function was recently calculated by Dabser and Hashimoto, and indeed it confirmed that this is the right low energy limit. But now we want to compare this supergravity calculation of the absorption with the gauge theory calculation of the absorption. Okay, and in the gauge theory calculation, you want to consider basically some strings incident on this stack of incident brains from the outside. And then you realize that this calculation at low energies can be easily done if you know the non-abelian action for n coincident D3 brains in some background of gauge fields. So when you actually write out the section, you see the beginnings of the operator state map, namely a given field of supergravity couples to a given operator in gauge theory. You see that the dilaton couples to the trace F squared operator, the Ramon scalar couples to trace F of dual, and so on. So now, suppose you're trying to do this calculation. So at leading order, you see that you just have a dilaton splitting into some two modes on the brain, and it's a very simple diagram to calculate, and this was done over a year ago, and you find amazingly that this diagram gives you exactly the same absorption probability as you had in supergravity. And this is very encouraging. Now, you can repeat the same exercise for another special operator, which is the stress-energy tensor. Not surprisingly, the stress-energy tensor couples to the graviton. So this is part of the story that any field theory, which is conformal and, of course, has a stress-energy tensor, will then have some gravitational description. And then for the graviton, you have a more complicated set of final states because it can go into fermions and scalars. You add it all up, and then you again see that the graviton cross-section once again agrees with the supergravity. So what are we doing here? Okay, let's just step back and see what we're doing. So in the gauge theory language, we're just computing the cut in the two-point function of two vertex operators. Moreover, we're just doing the one-loop diagram because we calculated the splitting of a dilaton into just two particles, and similar with Petit Minou. And we're finding, so similarly, the same cut can be deduced from supergravity. And we're finding that the two calculations are in exact agreement, including the coefficient. And what this is telling us, that there are certain correlation functions which are likely to be completely independent of G squared n. And Steve will follow up more on this story, and Friedman talked about it also yesterday. We believe that, for example, the non-renormalization of the two-point function of stress tensor is related by supersymmetry to the anomaly, and therefore is exactly given by one loop. So this gives you a pretty efficient method of at least calculating and, moreover, exactly normalizing the two-point function, because unless I had this coupling to the asymptotic region, I would not be able to compute these normalization coefficients exactly. So now I will basically stop discussing the correlation functions now and leave the rest to Steve. But of course, you've heard yesterday that there are now much more efficient ways of looking at correlation functions which go beyond the two-point functions. And this is essentially based on the statement due to Maldacena that it's really the throat of the three brain that corresponds to the that corresponds to the gauge theory. And this is highly natural from the point of view of this absorption, because in one language you basically tunnel through a barrier and produce an excitation of the throat. In the other language, a particle is absorbed and produces an excitation of the stack of coincident three brains. So therefore, it's highly natural to actually identify the throat with the gauge theory itself. And moreover, when we consider a signal coming from here, it basically wiggles the field configuration at the beginning of the throat. So we can imagine just throwing out the asymptotic region completely and replacing what goes on out here with just the dynamical boundary conditions in this region. So this brings in this prescription of calculating correlation functions from just boundary conditions on the ADS geometry. Okay, so the other comment is that once you accept this proposition that that gauge theory is equivalent to type 2B theory just on the three-brain throat, which is ADS 5 crosses 5, it seems to have some connections with some earlier conjectures by Polyakov that there should exist a sigma model or some sort of string theoretic formulation of the gauge theory with an extra fifth dimension, which comes from, roughly speaking, the geometry of the large N Feynman graph. However, the problem we're facing, as discussed yesterday by Zeitlin, is that there are Ramon-Ramon background five-form fields which we are learning how to deal with, but we don't know yet how to deal with them well on the quantum level. Nevertheless, we have accomplished a lot conceptually, because you see that we have, at least we have some classical string theory formulation, albeit with Ramon-Ramon backgrounds, and the alpha prime expansion is mapped into the strong coupling expansion and the gauge theory. So we can just use the formalism of string effective actions to address this problem. So in the remaining, I don't know how many minutes, let me just discuss another application, which is to the thermodynamics of the equal four super young Mills theory. So in the language of the three brain, what you want to do is you want to consider the near extremal three-brain solution of very low Hawking temperature. Namely, the Hawking temperature has to be T, which is much, much less than 1 over R, which is the inverse throat radius. And then in this limit, all the action takes place in the throat, and you might as well just replace the theory by the throat theory, which I'll do in a second. So this, so basically identify this with the strongly coupled super-Young-Mills theory at the same temperature. And this is the calculation that Gabser, Pete, and I looked at. You calculate the horizon area, express it in terms of the temperature, and find this very intriguing answer, that this Bekenstein-Hawking entropy goes as n squared t cubed times the volume. So now, when you discuss this n squared, so this should strike you right away. For example, the n squared dependence just means that the theory has n squared unconfined degrees of freedom, which is what you would expect because it's not a confining theory. It's n equal 4 super young Mills, which is a conformally invariant theory without a scale. But the same reason, the absence of the scale, is that because the entropy is extensive, it must go as the cube of the temperature. And again, this simple-minded area calculation reflects that. So basically, this gravitational entropy has all the right features that we would expect of the gauge theory, the right Hof scaling limit, and the right dependence on the temperature. Now, one exercise that we did is to compare the answer with the answer that you get for very weak coupling. And then you have something which is almost exactly the same, but has an extra factor of 4/3, namely, the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy is the 3/4 of just the free field entropy of the n equal 4 multiplet. So is this 3/4 a contradiction? Is it a paradox? We say no, it's really a prediction. It's not a contradiction. It's just a prediction about the behavior of the coefficient, because the coefficient on general ground should be just a function of the Hoft coupling g squared n. And what we're finding is that near zero, this function can be calculated using just standard lambda Lifshitz thermodynamics. So you can look up the normalization of all the fields. Well, for the infinite coupling, we see the limiting value from the Bekenstein-Hawking calculation. And what we recently did is to see if string theory, if string theory corrects this answer. So for consistency, we should see that the three-quarters starts being corrected by the alpha prime corrections in string theory. And what you see is that indeed it does, and the leading correction is of order g squared n to the power minus 3/2. So just to flash by you where it just comes from the r to the 4 term, or the wild tensor to the 4th term. You carry out this calculation, and you find a completely convergent perturbation to the free energy, which gives you this coefficient, which includes zeta of 3, etc., etc. So just a parting word is that you can do similar calculations for that, for other conformal theories. For example, for coincident M5 brains, the leading power is n cubed, and this r to the 4 term gives you a power n. For M2 brains, you have n to the 3/2 and correction n to the 1/2. And most satisfyingly, for the D1, D5 system, which is the original constituents of the 5D black hole, here you find that the relevant geometry is ADS3×S3, and here you find that this wild tensor to the 4th just vanishes, because the black hole in ADS3 is still locally ADS3. So, and this explains why there was no mismatch in the coefficient of the entropy between weak and strong coupling for the five-dimensional black hole. So I think this just shows how so the final transparency is that we saw how these alpha prime corrections start putting in the real physics of not infinite but finite coupling, and we also saw how more generally black 3 brains provide a dual description of Super Young-Mills theory and give us some lots of non-trivial information which we can only hope to check at the moment. So this is the...
We have time for a couple or three questions. Right here.
Yeah. Once you look at this spin correction and you see it pushes your function into the right direction,
right.
What is the reason you believe that it's a monotonic function? I mean, had you found the other time, you might still have said it will oscillate and then match whatever you need.
Yeah, I don't have a proof.
Let me repeat the question. The question is whether the function has to be monotonic and how you know it doesn't start to oscillate.
Well, I don't have a proof that it's monotonic, but actually there was an interesting paper by Horowitz and Polchinski where they argued that when you turn on G string N, when you turn on the finite coupling, you actually expect a reduction in this. And the argument they essentially gave is that when you're at very weak coupling, there are these commutator terms, X commutator X squared. And when you make a coupling, say, of order 1, then these terms start contributing to the energy, but the entropy you expect to be sort of the same order. So that amounts to an argument that increasing Gn actually reduces this function. I'm certainly actively thinking about how to turn it into a better argument, a more precise argument. And then another obvious calculation is to calculate it near 1, namely calculate the, say, the two-loop correction. What we have so far is the one-loop. The two-loop answer would test, of course, this monotonicity assumption. I think it will be monotonic. I mean, certainly the gauge field contributions are of the right sign.
Andy. The question is there some argument why you don't get a function of n as well as the 3/4?
You mean some corrections in 1 over n?
The n squared appears that it's also even strong coupling.
Right. I see what you're asking. You're asking why, so what we're computing, presumably the 3/4, is some highly non-trivial sum over planar diagrams. Okay, and you're asking why doesn't this diverge rather than approach? Well, I would say that the only thing it could diverge as is some power of g squared n, because you're summing planar diagrams, right? So there is n squared out front of the whole thing, and the, you're summing a series 1 plus a times g squared n plus dot dot dot. So the danger is that that the whole thing could just blow up on you in this large g squared n limit. And what the supergravity tells you is that it doesn't. But I, again, if I knew how to demonstrate that the sum of planar diagrams does not blow up, I think it would be...
So the question is whether it could be a function of g squared n and g.
Well, I think, I mean, the planar diagrams all have n squared out front. And if you look at the leading terms, they all just have g squared n's in them.
So I...
Yeah, yeah. Well, which you
could... You do have 1 over n, correct?
Yeah, yeah, I do have 1 over n, correct? I interpret these g corrections, at least here, as 1 over n corrections, right? So I'm sort of stuck with taking this tough limit here. And maybe one can relax it, and maybe you're thinking about keeping g string fixed and sending n to infinity. Now, I don't think this limit should make too much sense in the gauge theory, at least for these non-BPS quantities, but it might. I mean, it's a stronger statement.
In the gauge theory, you compute the entropy for any g and n, and you get an answer.
Right, but I think the structure of the answer should be n squared times f of g squared n plus 1 times another function of g squared n plus dot, 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 right? All multiplied by t cubed. By t.
Yeah, right.
Right. So I think in the planar limit, you can hope to sum up the diagrams and get this leading function of g squared n. And I certainly cannot argue that it approaches the constant, but let alone, I think the very good test would be to calculate this constant it approaches.
Okay. We should move on to the next speaker. Let's thank Igor again.